हरिः ॐ सहनवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवसरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम राम हरे हरे
Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chapter 13, Pastimes of Jagannanda the Pandit and Raghunath Bhatta Goswami. Page 65. 313, 38-39. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, visit all 12 forests of Vrindavan in the company of Sanatan Goswami. Do not leave his association for even a moment. You should remain in Vrindavan for only a short time and then return here as soon as possible. Also, do not climb Govardhan Hill to see the Gopal deity. Srila Prabhupada. In his Amrita Pravaha Bhasya, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur advises that one should avoid remaining in Vrindavan for a very long time. As the saying goes, familiarity breeds contempt. If one stays in Vrindavan for many days, he may fail to maintain proper respects for its inhabitants. Therefore, those who have not attained the stage of spontaneous love for Krishna should not live in Vrindavan very long. It is better for them to make short visits. One should also avoid climbing Govardhan Hill to see the Gopal deity. Since Govardhan Hill itself is identical with Gopal, one should not step on the hill or touch it with his feet. One may see Gopal when he goes elsewhere. 40-41. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued. Inform Sanatana Goswami that I am coming to Vrindavan for a second time, and he should therefore arrange a place for me to stay. After saying this, the Lord embraced Jagannanda Pandit, who then worshipped the Lord's lotus feet and started for Vrindavan. Verses 42-70. Jagannanda Pandit visits Vrindavan. He took permission from all the devotees, then departed. Traveling on the forest path, he soon reached Varanasi. When he met Tapan Misra and Chandrasekhara in Varanasi, they heard from him about topics concerning Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Finally, Jagannanda Pandit reached Mathura, where he met Sanatan Goswami. They were very pleased to see each other. After Sanatan Goswami had taken Jagannanda to see all 12 forests of Vrindavan, concluding with Mahavana, the two of them remained in Gokula. They stayed in Sanatan Goswami's cave. But Jagannanda Pandit would go to a nearby temple and cook for himself. Sanatana Goswami would beg alms from door to door in the vicinity of Mahavan. Sometimes he would go to a temple and sometimes to a Brahmin's house. Sanatana Goswami attended to all of Jagannanda Pandit's needs. He begged in the area of Mahavan and brought Jagannanda all kinds of things to eat and drink. One day, Jagannanda Pandit, having invited Sanatana to the nearby temple for lunch, finished his routine duties and began to cook. Previously, a great sannyasi named Mukunda Saraswati had given Sanatana Goswami an outer garment. Sanatana Goswami was wearing this cloth bound about his head when he came to Jagannanda Pandit's door and sat down. Assuming the reddish cloth to be a gift from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Jagannanda Pandit was overwhelmed with ecstatic love. Thus he questioned Sanatana Goswami, "Where did you get that reddish cloth on your head?" Jagannanda asked. Sanatana Goswami replied, "Mukunda Saraswati gave it to me." Hearing this, Jagannanda Pandit immediately became very angry and took a cooking pot in his hand, intending to beat Sanatana Goswami. Sanatana Goswami, however, knew Jagannanda Pandit very well and was consequently somewhat ashamed. Jagannanda therefore left the cooking pot on the stove and spoke as follows, "You are one of the chief associates of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Indeed, no one is dearer to him than you. Still, you have bound your head with a cloth given to you by another sannyasi. Who can tolerate such behavior?" Sanatana Goswami said, "My dear Jagannanda Pandit, you are a greatly learned saint. No one is dear to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu than you. This faith in Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu quite befits you. Unless you demonstrated it, how could I learn such faith? My purpose in binding my head with the cloth has now been fulfilled because I have personally seen your uncommon love for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This saffron cloth is unfit for a Vaishnava to wear. Therefore, I have no use for it. I shall give it to a stranger." Srila Prabhupada. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur comments on this incident as follows. Vaishnavas are all liberated persons, unattached to anything material. Therefore, a Vaishnava need not accept the dress of a sannyasi to prove his exalted position. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted the renounced order from a sannyasi of the Mayavad school. Present-day Vaishnava sannyasis, however, never think that by accepting the dress of the sannyas order, they become equal to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In fact, the Vaishnava accepts the sannyas order to remain an eternal servant of his spiritual master. He accepts the sannyas order knowing that he is unequal to his spiritual master, who is a Paramahamsa, and he thinks that he is unfit to dress like a Paramahamsa. Therefore, Vaishnava accepts sannyas out of humility, not out of pride. Sanatana Goswami had adopted the dress of a Paramahamsa, therefore it was inappropriate for him to wear the saffron cloth on his head. However, a Vaishnava sannyasi does not think himself fit to imitate the dress of a Paramahamsa Vaishnava. According to the principles set down by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Trinadapi Suni Chena, one should always think himself in the lowest stage, not on the level of a Paramahamsa Vaishnava. Thus, a Vaishnava will sometimes accept the sannyas order just to keep himself below the level of Paramahamsa Vaishnava. This is the instruction of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So here he's putting it the other way. It says that the Parivrajakacharya sannyas is accepted to keep oneself below the position of Paramahamsa. Like this. And so that Sanatana Goswami is on that platform, then therefore it was inappropriate for him to be wearing saffron. Since he was higher. At the same time, he's also pointing, it's not that, okay, we become very advanced and all that. The idea of taking Paribhajakacharya sannyas is to keep yourself in a lower position, not that it means I'm in a higher position. 313.62-70. When Jagannanda Pandit finished cooking, he offered the food to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Then he and Sanatana Goswami sat down and ate the prasadam. After eating the prasadam, they embraced each other and cried due to separation from Lord Chaitanya. They passed 2 months in Vrindavan in this way. Finally, they could no longer tolerate the unhappiness of separation from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Jagannanda Pandit therefore gave Sanatana Goswami the message from the Lord, "I am also coming to Vrindavan. Please arrange a place for me to stay." When Sanatana Goswami granted permission for Jagannanda to return to Jagannath Puri, he gave Jagannanda some gifts for Lord Chaitanya. The gifts consisted of some sand from the site of the Rasa Lila, a stone from Govardhan Hill, dry ripened pilu fruits, and a garland of small conch shells. Thus,
is this what Jagannath will get? No.
I'm not sure.
No, it came from someone else. Someone else had previously.
Given. Okay, so I mean, so this is in an order here.
Yes.
Because sometimes the stories are not necessarily in order. So.
Okay.
So.
That's true, because when you hear that past time previously, Jagannath Pandit is mentioned as bringing those gifts back to Chaitanya.
Hmm. Yeah, so it may have been this is after.
Yes.
It's just that there's something to discuss, like Jiva Goswami is giving there's a chronology in his presentation of the philosophy. So the ontology is presented in such a way that one can appreciate and move forward like that. So here is, if you're telling about the pastimes, so then the aspects of the pastimes is then one can move forward in appreciation like that. Because it, you see here, then it's about this aspect of the affection that the devotees have for Lord Chaitanya, you know, the particular mood, you know, how they stick to their particular principles that they follow and all that. Because that's an important aspect, is that you know, it'll be said that, oh, that's Vaidhi, like that. But sticking to your particular group, sticking to your line, that's not Vaidhi. That's just faith. That's just that dedication. You know, that Vyavasayatmika Bhuti, like we were discussing earlier, that devotees sometimes like to speculate because it gives seemingly other options, or this or that, or maybe this or maybe that. So difficulties, it's not enhancing their faith in the Lord, and it's not centered around the Lord. Because the idea is that the Lord being a person, then one's affections are directed towards the Lord, right, as the Vishaya. And then the devotee, then he is the Ashraya of that love for the Lord. But if it's a matter of keeping options open, then what rati, what attraction can develop? You say, well, I could be this, or can I be that, or so many things. But it's about yourself. But you are not an ashray of a particular flavor. And Krishna is not a specific vishaya. So even though it may be presented that these are advanced platforms, it's actually no, because advanced means there's a natural attraction towards Krishna, and one is, you know, having that attraction towards Krishna. But if it's always, well, if we have this, and we choose to be that, or stuff, then Krishna's not a focus, and yourself, the focus is on yourself, but not as the shelter of that particular relationship with Krishna. Mm-hmm. You understand? So it's not actually very advanced. So it may be presented, but it's not actually advanced.
It's also coming partially from Balabas, mm-hmm. because they don't have a study like Gaudiya's. Their relationship changes according to the situation. Mm. Means if Krishna is in the mood of he needs a servant, then devotee becomes a servant and serves him in that mood. Mm. And then if it's friendship, then he gets that. This is their thing.
Okay. So, and then also, I think the parental is thrown in.
Parental is the prominence.
Oh, okay. But then, yes. But it'll be, if it's the prominence, then it's just like Yudhishthir is parental with, I think, servitorship or something like that. You do have those mixes.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. They move in those three, the middle three.
Yeah.
Because they're one group.
Yeah. But it's not fixed for them.
Oh, okay, so it's not even important that it hasn't developed.
Yeah, it's just whenever the Lord requires that kind of service,
then they'll do that.
It happens. And then if the mood changes, then that happens. So this also comes, you know, from going, hearing this and that without discrimination. And
that's, yeah, yeah. Well, I'm just there, but you also, you see before, as you started with the Balakrishna, then he met the Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Then that association, but then that's not going to bring him as prominent. So then he went with the Nimbarkas. Is it Nimbarkas? No, it's
Vishnuswami. Vishnuswami.
Yeah.
Yeah, he followed that line. Because Vishnuswami, his philosophy by that time was already lost.
Mm. So, okay, so then...
So he
okay,
became
so
that
charger. Okay, so that's how it becomes the Balabha.
He became the charger.
Okay. Yeah, and so they pick up from them or from, you know, the locals. Because when you have the, you know, it's a fairly standard thing, you know, of your kind of general populace, you know, following, you know, some semblance of the Vedic kind of, you know, claim to be following the Vedic. You know, just like in the West, they say that they're some variety of Abrahamic, but how much they follow is another thing. Right? So then they'll also have all these things. Like here, Bengal is, you know, the Kali season, they're worshipping that, it's Lakshmi, they're worshipping that, Janmashtami, they're worshipping Krishna, Shiva, Radha, they're doing that. So it has that little bit of, it doesn't have any, it's more about, you know, them experiencing, which is natural, people want to experience something nice, but it doesn't actually develop a very deep relationship. But that's always the funny thing, is that what's taken as a symptom, that in their mind is a symptom of advancement, is actually a symptom of non-advancement. You know, it's just like, no, we don't do all these rules and regulations, you know, we just worship Radha and Krishna. That's our bhav, and like this, but then they make strict rules on how you're supposed to worship Radha and Krishna, you know, to be rag. You know, it's very, you have to do this, you can't do that. So that's Vaidhi. So they think they're being more advanced, but they're being Vaidhi, and it's a very narrow Vaidhi, and not recommended by the Acharyas, you know. Yes?
I think that anecdote from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur fits very nicely, that this is a very aristocratic man in Calcutta. He always celebrates a big Durga Puja festival and invites many people. He was doing for many years and then became a like very prominent person, and suddenly one year he didn't invite people. And the next year he didn't invite. Then one man met him on the road somewhere and asked, like, you used to invite us, so why are you not inviting us anymore? He says, now I'm very old, I cannot enjoy eating, and all this festival, so that's why I'm not.
Okay, he's too old. So it's just not so much about worshipping the Lord, the man, it's a little about himself. Yeah.
So I think the whole thing fits this idea and all that.
Yeah, it's just where the nectar is. But, I mean, you connect things to the Lord, of course there's going to be a benefit if you're following the Acharyas, say. But then Lord Chaitanya, when he says he's giving the highest, is very fine. Like we see here, making the distinction, Jiva Goswami, the distinction between, you know, step by step going through how it's raised. Like Sanatana Goswami gives a very main, you know, hits all the main points on going up through all the devotees or all the different positions and everything. They see Jiva Goswami then exactly philosophically explains each position, what's going on, how one turns into the next. So it's a very exact, because you can say, you know, that highest aspect, but it's also the most exact aspect. You know, it's very, very specific. So there, the surrender, therefore, is, you know, very special.
So Mahaprabhu didn't go back a second time.
No.
He had an idea, but it never happened.
Thus Jagannanda Pandit, bearing all these gifts, started on his journey. Sanatana Goswami, however, was very much agitated after bidding him farewell. Soon afterwards, Sanatana Goswami selected a place where Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu could stay while in Vrindavan. It was a temple in the highlands named Dwarasaditya Tila. Sanatana Goswami kept the temple very clean and in good repair. In front of it, he erected a small hut. That's where the samadhi is.
Yes.
So maybe that's why that maybe that became his prominent spot, because Lord Chaitanya is going to come and he's keeping his spot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's interesting, the highlands. Yeah, because it is. It's the only kind of like hill in Vrindavan. There's another one, I think, on the farther back. I kind of remember. You don't see it so much anymore. You used to be able to see it like 70s, 80s when you're going up from Lohi Bazaar, and then it would be before the Shambhag, but after now I think there's that one famous sweet shop. It means you have the crossroad.
Yeah.
Then if you keep going towards the temple,
yeah,
there's, you know, it's quite tight there. Then it opens up.
Yeah.
Right? And then it used to be quite empty here. There was a bit of a hill over here. Not much. Not like Dwarasa.
Now it's all flat basically. Except for that place, Dvadasa Dikyatila, and then, you know, Varshana and underground,
yeah.
Those are hills, but otherwise it's all flat. Same day level, the team, we call it town.
Okay, you can build on that stuff. Yeah, because before it was just kind of open land and like that, a few huts here and there. And I guess they grazed the cows and stuff. Verses 71 to 77. Jagannanda Pandit returns to Jagannath Puri. 313.7. Okay, same. Meanwhile, traveling very quickly, Jagannanda Pandit soon arrived in Jagannath Puri, much to the joy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his devotees. After offering prayers at the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Jagannanda Pandit greeted everyone. Then the Lord embraced Jagannanda very strongly. Jagannanda Pandit offered obeisances to the Lord on behalf of Sanatana Goswami. Then he gave the Lord the dust from the site of the rasa dance, along with the other gifts. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu kept all the gifts except the pilu fruits, which he distributed to the devotees. Because the fruits were from Vrindavan, everyone ate them with great happiness. Those devotees who were familiar with pilu fruits sucked on the seeds, but the Bengali devotees who did not know what they were chewed the seeds and swallowed them. The hot chili-like taste burned the tongues of those who chewed the seeds. Thus the eating of pilu fruits from Vrindavan became a pastime of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's. When Jagannanda Pandit returned from Vrindavan, everyone was jubilant. Thus Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu enjoyed his pastimes while residing at Jagannath Puri. Pilu, isn't that the one, the tree that always bends? Aren't those pilu? Means everywhere in Vrindavan you see those trees, they don't grow up like this, they just grow up and go like this. You know, everywhere, you know, they don't get very high. You know, like that much, or maybe maximum to the light, a few branches. You see everywhere then.
Yeah, the purple ones, right?
Hmm?
The purple?
The fruit. The fruit.
Oh, those ones that they always sell.
Mm.
No, no.
No, absolutely.
It must be like the Vrindavan cool, you know? Like this side you have cool. Yeah. That side is pilu. Yes. Because the Bengali devotees didn't know them, so they're not over here. I think they like dry climates.
Because what you explain, they have a fruit like an olive.
Oh, okay.
But, I don't know, maybe it's pilu, but I'm not sure. But those trees, like what you explained, it's all over the place, but it has a... And Brijbasis, they make pickle from
those.
Okay. But it's... I'm not sure if it's peanuts.
Like
like berry.
Yeah.
They look like grapes.
Oh, yeah.
Pilu. Huh. Yeah. Doesn't show... Does it show the tree?
This
is
the bush.
Yeah,
it's like a bush only.
So maybe it's not. Is it the one I'm talking about? May not be.
Yeah, it's like a bush. It's not.
It's
bush.
Not the one we're talking about.
It's a bush.
Okay.
And it looks like grapes.
Yeah, a bit like grapes.
So were they dried? What you said?
Yeah, he tried them.
Yeah.
It would have to be dried because...
Dry ripened pilu fruits. Okay, yeah. The fruits were ripened then dried. Yeah, because otherwise how would he carry it so far?
That's what I was about to say. He's got to walk back with a bag of fruit.
Quite small, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's
small like, and then dry, getting
like
more small.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, Google. Verses 78 to 88. Lord Chaitanya hears the song of the Devadasi. One day, when the Lord was going to the temple of Yameshwara, a female singer began to sing in the Jagannath temple. She sang a Gujari tune in a very sweet voice. And because the subject was Jayadeva Goswami's Gita Govinda, the song attracted the attention of the entire world. Hearing the song from a distance, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu immediately became ecstatic. He did not know whether it was a man or a woman singing. As the Lord ran in ecstasy to meet the singer, thorny hedges pricked his body. Govinda ran very quickly behind the Lord, who did not feel any pain from the pricking of the thorns. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was running very rapidly, and the girl was only a short distance away. Just then, Govinda caught the Lord in his arms and cried, "It is a woman singing." As soon as he heard the word woman, the Lord became externally conscious and turned back. "My dear Govinda," he said, "you have saved my life. If I had touched the body of a woman, I would certainly have died. I shall never be able to repay my debt to you." Govinda replied, "Lord Jagannath has saved you. I am insignificant." Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu replied, "My dear Govinda, you should stay with me always. There is danger anywhere and everywhere. Therefore, you should protect me very carefully." After saying this, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu returned home. When Srup Damodar Goswami and his other attendants heard about the incident, they became very much afraid. Verses 89-139. The story of Raghunath Bhatta Goswami. 313-89-91. During this time, Raghunath Bhatta, the son of Tapan Misra, gave up all his duties and left home, intending to meet Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Accompanied by a servant carrying his baggage, Raghunath Bhatta started from Varanasi and traveled along the path leading through Bengal. In Bengal, he met Ramadas Vishwasa, who belonged to the Kayastha caste. He was one of the king's secretaries. Srila Prabhupada. The word Vishwasa, Kayastha, indicate a secretary or clerk belonging to the Kayastha caste. Kayasthas were usually secretaries to kings, governors, or other important persons. It is said that anyone working in the government secretariat at this time was a Kayastha.
Kanara comes from earlier, the rupees was Kanara's, like the panas, 16 panas make one Kanara. So counting, always counting.
Vishwasa Kanara. So Vishwasa means counting all the Kanaras of the world.
Very loyally count.
We saw before that he was saying that in Bihar they would catch the Bengalis who were going if they were alone and then get them to do all this kind of work because they know they're smart, you know. Mm-hmm. So. Ramadasa Vishwasa was very learned in all the revealed scriptures. He was a teacher of the famous book Kavya Prakasha and was known as an advanced devotee and worshipper of Raghunath, Lord Ramachandra. Srila Prabhupada. Commenting on the word Parama Vaishnava, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that anyone who desires to merge into the existence of the Lord cannot be a pure Vaishnava. But because Ramadasa Vishwasa was a great devotee of Lord Ramachandra, he was almost a Vaishnava. In those days, no one could distinguish between a pure Vaishnava and a pseudo Vaishnava. Therefore, Ramadasa Vishwasa was known as a Vaishnava because he worshipped Lord Ramachandra. You know, so like you see, nowadays, we were discussing before, they worship the Lord, and they follow all the regulations and all that, but the Lord is just part of their ritual. In other words, the ritual says you have to worship the Lord like this. That's why they're worshiping the Lord. It's not that they want to worship the Lord, so how do you worship the Lord? No, they want to perform this ritual, it gives this result. It requires worshiping the Lord. That makes sense? So technically it's not actually considered devotional service, but as far as the general populace goes, they're nice devotees because they can't tell the difference. 313.93-112. But by the association of Vaishnava, you could bring them to be nice devotees. Ramadas had renounced everything and was going to see Lord Jagannath. While traveling, he chanted the holy name of Lord Ram 24 hours a day. When he met Raghunath Bhatta on the way, he took Raghunath's luggage on his head and carried it. Ramadas served Raghunath Bhatta in various ways, even massaging his legs. Raghunath Bhatta felt some hesitation in accepting all this service. You are a respectable gentleman, a learned scholar and a great devotee, Raghunath Bhatta said. Please do not try to serve me. Just come with me in a happy mood. Ramadas replied, I am a Shudra, a fallen soul. To serve a Brahmin is my duty and religious principle. Therefore, please do not be hesitant. I am your servant. When I serve you, my heart becomes jubilant. Thus, Ramadas carried the baggage of Raghunath Bhatta and served him sincerely. He constantly chanted the holy name of Lord Ramachandra day and night. Traveling in this way, Raghunath Bhatta soon arrived at Jagannath Puri, where he met Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with great delight and fell at his lotus feet. Raghunath Bhatta fell straight as a rod at the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Then the Lord embraced him, knowing well who he was. Raghunath offered respectful obeisances to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu on behalf of Tapan Misra and Chandrasekhara, and the Lord also inquired about them. It is very good that you have come here, the Lord said. Now go see the lotus-eyed Lord Jagannath. Today you will accept prasadam here at my place. The Lord asked Govinda to arrange for Raghunath Bhatta's accommodations and then introduced him to all the devotees, headed by Swoop Damarna Goswami. Thus, Raghunath Bhatta lived with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continuously for 8 months. And by the Lord's mercy, he felt increasing transcendental happiness every day. He would periodically cook rice with various vegetables and invite Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to his home. Raghunath Bhatta was an expert cook. Whatever he prepared tasted just like nectar. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted with great satisfaction all the food he prepared. After the Lord was satisfied, Raghunath Bhatta would eat his remnants. When Ramadas Vishwasa met Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Lord did not show him any special mercy, although this was their first meeting. Within his heart, Ramadas Vishwasa was an impersonalist who desired to merge into the existence of the Lord. So that's why I say they're not actually devotees. Even though they perform the activities of devotion towards the Lord very nicely and very sincerely, but the Lord is part of the ritual because they don't accept that the Lord has form ultimately. So this is just part of the ritual and part of the focus. You know, it's just like when you meditate on something. It makes it work nicely. So therefore, then, you know, he likes to meditate on Lord Ramachandra, chant his name. Yes.
So that's what we call Bhakti Mishra.
Yes, 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 yes.
Also, Nectar of Devotion mentions the four kinds of avas. The first one is rati avas.
Mm.
Means that's what they feel.
Mm-hmm.
It appears like taste from an external point of view, what they are tasting, all the sattvic avas coming mm-hmm. out. But it's an avas of the rati rather than the real rati.
Yeah. They get, you know, from seeing other devotees and like that, they pick it up from there. Because it's a matter of, because the system that they're doing is so dry and all that, then they do this for taste. Yeah. Like that.
Mm-hmm. It's not an ambulance tradition.
No, no. Because they don't accept the eternal form of the Lord. Like that. That's the difficulty.
Also, this pastime shows, Maharaj, that the criteria for seeing who is a devotee and who is not. Many times it's somebody comes to devotional service and understand, oh, they are this kind of higher taste and everything. Naturally, they all go for that secondary symptom somebody exhibits.
Mm.
But the acharyas always show that the primary aspects by which one can decide rather than on the secondary.
Because secondary may look very good or they may be very renounced or, you know, very devotional, but you have to see what is that means. In other words, the Lord's form is not eternal. The worship of the Lord that they are doing is part of their ritual. It can be of any of the deities, you know, of the five Panchopasana. But, you know, sometimes they focus on one. They prefer one. Like that. And so it's not, you know, so they have some other motive. So it's still material. It's considered material.
Also, always this Mayavad is, they're highly learned in Kavyas.
Mm.
This guy also, Kavya Prakash, is teacher of Kavya Prakash.
Mm. You mean, but they're teaching the mechanics of it.
Yes, yes.
But, you know, as far as actually, you know, it's like grammar or something. It's just a finer grammar.
So they think that it in itself had a taste, and then try to squeeze in.
Okay, so they're getting the taste from the rules of the kavya rather than the kavya itself. That's interesting. So it's also secondary. Okay, that's interesting. Within his heart, Ramadasa Vishvasa was an impersonalist who desired to merge into the existence of the Lord. He was very proud of his learning. Since Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the omniscient Supreme Personality of Godhead, he can understand the heart of everyone, and thus he knew all these things. Ramadasa Vishvasa then took up residence in Jagannath Puri and taught the Kavya Prakasha to the Pakhanayaka family, the descendants of Bhavananda Rai. After 8 months, when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu bade farewell to Raghunath Bhatta, the Lord flatly forbade him to marry. "Do not marry," the Lord said. Raghunath Bhattacharya had become a greatly advanced devotee while still unmarried. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu could see this, and therefore he advised him not to begin the process of material sense gratification. Marriage is a concession for people who are unable to control their senses. Raghunath, however, being an advanced devotee of Krishna, naturally had no desire for sense gratification. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu advised him not to enter the bondage of marriage. Generally, a person cannot make much advancement in spiritual consciousness if he is married. He becomes attached to his family and is prone to sense gratification. Thus, his spiritual advancement is very slow or almost nil. Yes, so since he's already on an advanced position, there's no need to get involved. If there's a position that's not as advanced and has material desire, then the marriage life then gives the facility to engage all those wide varieties, range. Because unmarried, the rules are pretty simple and straightforward. And so it doesn't accommodate much. But the family life will accommodate a wide range of situations. And so then he's saying for him there's no need to get involved.
When Chaitanya instructed him in new ways, Lord Chaitanya gave the same instruction to Raghunath Bhatta and Gopal Bhatta, new way to your parents who pass away, and then you go to Vrindavan. Now, out of the six Goswamis, none of them actually went for married life.
Yeah, you don't hear about it.
Raghunath Das.
Oh, Raghunath Das.
Yeah,
he got married.
He was married, yeah.
But what happens when they were engaged in the service?
I'm not sure. It doesn't mention anything. They may have been, may not have been. You get the idea that they weren't necessarily.
Nothing is mentioned.
Yeah, because also it said that Sanatana Goswami, when he had the Brahmins at his home, or his residence, I'm not even sure if they called it a home, but his residence, then he didn't hear anything about the wife or
anything.
Yeah,
he's running around.
Yeah, so but at the same time, it doesn't. So the point is the context is it's not important.
Yeah.
So it's not important. So the basic principle is that they had no attraction for the material engagement, and so therefore they didn't engage. And even if they did, they could move on very comfortably. Like you see Raghunath Das. There's an example of like that. I think also Vishwanath. He was married and all that, and he didn't pay any attention.
He was not interested, he walked off.
Yeah, like that. I think of
Srinivasacharya
also wasn't married, was he?
Srinivasacharya.
I don't think so, but I think, what's the last one? Well, there's Rasikananda.
Rasikananda.
And the other one? Shamananda. I think because they preached in Orissa. I think they were married because I think there was a whole pastime someplace He's talking about one of them had two wives, and there was a whole scene going on one time that they were. It was a big, big. That I don't know, but he was.
Old.
He was 90, so it didn't really matter. Yeah, so it's just, it'll be very individual.
Yes.
But, who?
He was.
He was?
Yeah, and then when his wife died.
He was a grain merchant.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
He used to trade in grains.
And his wife
His wife died. Yes.
So he just closed business. And
closed business. Don't call me, we'll call.
Yeah, so it's just they do their duties, yes. You know, so that's the whole thing, because that's the whole point is that you, whatever position you're in, you have your particular duties. Those duties are the way through which you express your affection for Krishna, you know, and interact with the devotees. So it's a very natural that your position already comes with it. You know, even if you look at it, the advanced stage, it talks about what's your service.
Yes.
You know, what's your resume, what's your service, what all these different things. So they're looking at it from this, but it's actually that's how you express. You know, that's your specific thing, not that other things you've done, but so the idea of prescribed duties and that regulation and all that, that's just trying to get you to do like they do in the spiritual world. You know, but always in context of Krishna. So the Braj Basa is that the whole village is running according to all the different rules and everyone's obligations, but they're all serving Krishna. Mm-hmm. So here the idea is that you have your regulations that you're following, and then you should be doing that without attachment, and you should be doing that to please Krishna. And in the spiritual world, then they're doing everything to please Krishna, and these are the ways that it's expressed. So they start from Krishna and move down. You start at the other end and, you know, go from your unregulated to your regulated. They're regulated, then it's not coming from just social custom, but it's coming from the regulation given by the Lord. Then it's coming from, I'm servant of the Lord. Then you're like that. So, 3:13, 1:13. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said to Raghunath Bhatta, when you return home, serve your aged father and mother, who are devotees. Try to study Srimad Bhagavatam from a pure Vaishnava who has realized God. Srila Prabhupada, one should note how Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, advised Raghunath Bhattacharya to learn Srimad Bhagavatam. He advised him to understand Srimad Bhagavatam not from professional men, but from a real Bhagavata, a devotee. He also advised Raghunath Bhatta to serve his mother and father because they were both Lord Chaitanya's devotees. Anyone who wishes to advance in Krishna consciousness must try to serve the devotees of Krishna. As Narottam Das Thakur says, Chariya Vaishnava Seva Nishtara Payeche Keva. Without serving a self-realized Vaishnava, no one has ever been released from the materialistic way of life. Pretty straightforward. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would never have advised Raghunath Bhatta to serve ordinary parents. But since his parents were Vaishnavas, the Lord advised him to serve them. One might ask, why shouldn't ordinary parents be served? As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 5.5.18, Gurur nasasyat svajano nasasyat pita nasasyaj janani nasasyat daivam natatsyat na patis chasa syan namo chayed yaf no yas samupeta mrityum. One who cannot deliver his dependent from the path of birth and death should never become a spiritual master, a relative, a father or mother, or a worshipable demigod, nor should such a person become a husband. Everyone naturally gets a father and mother at the time of birth, but the real father and mother are those who can release their offspring from the clutches of imminent death. This is possible only for parents advanced in Krishna consciousness. Therefore, any parents who cannot enlighten their offspring in Krishna consciousness cannot be accepted as a real father and mother. Following verse from the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1-200 confirms the uselessness of serving ordinary parents. Laukiki Vaidiki Vyapi Yakriya Kriyate Mune Hari Sevanukulaiva. No, wait. Hari Sevanukulaiva Sakarya Bhaktim Ichata. One should perform only those activities, either worldly or prescribed by Vedic rules and regulations, which are favorable for the cultivation of Krishna consciousness. Right, so what's favorable, that's done. And what's not, so the acharyas give what's favorable and what's not, so then we don't have to speculate. And then in that position, then we absorb ourselves in service to the Lord. Right? Concerning the study of Srimad Bhagavatam, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu clearly advises that one avoid hearing from a non-Vaishnava professional reciter. In this connection, Sanatana Goswami quotes a verse from the Padma Purana. A Vaishnava mukod girnam putam hari katamritam shravanam naiva kartavyam sarpochishtam yatapayaha. No one should hear or take lessons from a person who is not a Vaishnava. Even if he speaks about Krishna, such a person should not be accepted, for it is like milk touched by the lips of a serpent. Nowadays it is fashionable to observe Bhagavat Saptaha and hear Srimad Bhagavatam from persons who are anything but advanced devotees or self-realized souls. There are even many Mayavadis who read Srimad Bhagavatam to throngs of people. Many Mayavadis have recently begun reciting Srimad Bhagavatam in Vrindavan, and because they can present the Bhagavatam with word jugglery, twisting the meaning by grammatical tricks, materialistic persons who go to Vrindavan as a matter of spiritual fashion like to hear them. All this is clearly forbidden because it'll give a materialistic view. You know, it sounds very intellectual like that. They'll tell nice stories and it gives you options, right? All this is clearly forbidden by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We should note carefully that since these Mayavadis cannot personally know the meaning of Srimad Bhagavatam, they cannot deliver others by reciting it. On the other hand, an advanced devotee of the Lord is free from material bondage. He personifies Srimad Bhagavatam in life and action. Therefore, we advise that anyone who wants to learn Srimad Bhagavatam must approach such a realized soul. 3.13.114.133. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu concluded, "Come again to Neelachal, Jagannath Puri." After saying this, the Lord put his own neck beads on Raghunath Bhatta's neck. Then the Lord embraced him and bade him farewell. Overwhelmed with ecstatic love, Raghunath Bhatta began to cry due to imminent separation from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. After taking permission from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and all the devotees, headed by Swoop Damodar, Raghunath Bhatta returned to Varanasi. In accordance with the instructions of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he constantly rendered service to his mother and father for 4 years. He also regularly studied Srimad Bhagavatam from the self-realized Vaishnavas. Then his parents died at Kashi, Varanasi, and he became detached. He therefore returned to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, giving up all relations with his home. As previously, Raghunath remained continuously with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for 8 months. Then the Lord gave him the following order. "My dear Raghunath, on my order, go to Vrindavan and live there under the care of Rupa and Sanatana Goswamis. In Vrindavan, you should chant the Hare Krishna mantra 24 hours a day and read Srimad Bhagavatam continuously. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, will very soon bestow his mercy upon you." After saying this, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu embraced Raghunath Bhakta, and by the Lord's mercy, Raghunath was enlivened with ecstatic love for Krishna. At a festival, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had been given some unspiced betel and a garland of tulsi leaves, 14 cubits long. Wow, 14 cubits. So that'll be, you know, in half, 7 cubits. 7 will be 7 and 3.5, 10.5 feet. So the garland will be from the floor here basically up to almost the, you know, that bead at the top under the roof.
Maybe offered to Jagannath.
Could be. Good chance. Here it says, the garland had been worn by Lord Jagannath. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave the garland and betel to Raghunath Bhatta, who accepted them as a worshipable deity and preserved them very carefully. Taking permission from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Raghunath Bhatta then departed for Vrindavan. When he arrived there, he put himself under the care of Rupa and Sanatana Goswamis. When reciting Srimad Bhagavatam in the company of Rupa and Sanatana, Raghunath Bhatta would be overwhelmed with ecstatic love for Krishna. By the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he experienced the symptoms of ecstatic love, tears trembling and faltering in the voice. His eyes filled with tears and his throat became choked, and thus he could not recite Srimad Bhagavatam. His voice was as sweet as a cuckoo's, and he would recite each verse of Srimad Bhagavatam in three or four tunes. Thus his recitations were very sweet to hear. When he recited or heard about the beauty and sweetness of Krishna, he would be overwhelmed with ecstatic love and became oblivious to everything. Thus Raghunath Bhatta surrendered fully at the lotus feet of Lord Govinda, and those lotus feet became his life and soul. Subsequently, Raghunath Bhatta ordered his disciples to construct a temple for Govinda. He prepared various ornaments for Govinda, including a flute and shark-shaped earrings. Raghunath Bhatta would neither hear nor speak about anything of the material world. He would simply discuss Krishna and worship the Lord day and night. He would not listen to blasphemy of a Vaishnava, nor would he listen to talk of a Vaishnava's misbehavior. He knew only that everyone was engaged in Krishna's service. He did not understand anything else. Srila Prabhupada. Raghunath Bhatta never did anything harmful to a Vaishnava. In other words, he was never inattentive in the service of the Lord, nor did he ever violate the rules and regulations of a pure Vaishnava. It is the duty of a Vaishnava Acharya to prevent his disciples and followers from violating the principles of Vaishnava behavior. He should always advise them to strictly follow the regulative principles, which will protect them from falling down. Although a Vaishnava preacher may sometimes criticize others, Raghunath Bhatta avoided this. Even if another Vaishnava was actually at fault, Raghunath Bhatta would not criticize him. He saw only that everyone is engaged in Krishna's service. That is the position of the Mahabhagavata. Actually, even if one is serving Maya, in a higher sense, he is also a servant of Krishna. Because Maya is the servant of Krishna, anyone serving Maya serves Krishna indirectly. Therefore, it is said, Keha mane, keha namane, shava tara dasa. Je na mane tara hoy se pape nasha. Some accept him, whereas others do not. Yet everyone is his servant. One who does not accept him, however, will be ruined by his sinful activities. Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila 685. Because everybody is servant of the Lord, so he would just see that aspect that they're serving.
When it says that he received the instruction to study, read the Srimad Bhagavatam Council. So the Srimad Bhagavatam is not just the 10th canto, they are 12th canto.
Yes.
And it says every time that he read the Bhagavatam, he had ecstatic symptoms of love for Krishna. Which means that everything, in every canto, every chapter, every topic, would put him in ecstasy because he was connected to Krishna.
But it is connected to Krishna.
Yeah, in other words, he saw Krishna in whatever pastime is.
Yeah. Yes, yes.
Right.
I mean, so also you have is that these, because the point is Krishna is who's expanding, it's all the,
yes,
his different avatars are performing the pastimes and the devotees and stuff like that. Because ultimately the whole point is just bringing one to them. That aspect of appreciating Krishna. So he'll see everything in the context of that Krishna is, you know, Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam. So then there's no problem.
Like he was also expert in the melodies of the verses.
Yes, yes. Right. Like I said, I think the whole Bhagavatam, we could do that in three or four different tunes.
Right.
Like that. So that's good.
I think he was a good cook also.
Yes, said whatever he cooked was like nectar. I think there was one other. Who was that? I don't remember. There's another, I think someplace where it mentioned, one of the devotees. I don't know if he was in Vrindavan, or there was, it was, if he was visiting, if he stayed there. And he also, his cooking, it said, it was always like nectar. I can't remember who he cooked for. He may have been cooking for Govindaji. I don't remember. But it specifically mentioned that. Because otherwise it doesn't necessarily mention. Yes, so everybody's connected to Krishna. Everyone's serving Krishna directly or indirectly, whether they accept or not. Just those who don't, then they'll be, you know, their sinful activities will always give them trouble. Let's see. 3:13, 134, 139. When Raghunath Bhatta Goswami was absorbed in remembrance of Lord Krishna, he would take the tulsi garland and the prasadam of Lord Jagannath given to him by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, bind them together and wear them on his neck. Thus I have described the powerful mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, by which Raghunath Bhatta Goswami remained constantly overwhelmed with ecstatic love for Krishna. In this chapter, I have spoken about three topics: Jagannanda Pandit's visit to Vrindavana, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's listening to the song of the Devadasi at the temple of Lord Jagannath, and how Raghunath Bhatta Goswami achieved ecstatic love for Krishna by the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Gaura Hari, bestows ecstatic love for Krishna upon anyone who hears all these topics with faith and love. Praying at the lotus feet of Sri Rupa and Sri Raghunath, always desiring their mercy, I, Krishna Das, narrate Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, following in their footsteps. Conclusion. One should not criticize a Vaishnava, even if they are actually at fault. 133 purport, paraphrased. Raghunath Bhatta would neither hear nor speak about anything in the material world. He would simply discuss Krishna and worship the Lord day and night. He would not listen to blasphemy of a Vaishnava, nor would he listen to talk of a Vaishnava's misbehavior. He knew only that everyone was engaged in Krishna's service. He did not understand anything else. Text 132-133. Raghunath Bhatta never did anything harmful to a Vaishnava. In other words, he was never inattentive in the service of the Lord. Yeah. Lord, because if you're always absorbed in service to the Lord, then you see everybody in context of service to the Lord. So then you'll always deal properly.
I mean, it's a. I mean, of course, this is ideal, but you know, I often wonder. I mean, even on our level, when you do service with other devotees, there's all sorts of things going on. You know, people go off the rail, and then you've got to point it out. You've got to analyze it. Because you need to make decisions. And there's a fine line. It's really what's going on in your own heart.
Yes.
If you do it for the sake of management, for the welfare of the devotees, or if you really come out and say, oh, I'm going to tell you about this guy.
Yes, yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So, you know, for a manager, it's such a huge responsibility. Like, sometimes I wonder, you know, how a temple president of a GBC or whatever, how do they even share their rounds, you know? All the issues that go on every single day where you have to deal with individuals who are cases, who are, you know, problematic, who deviate, who fall down.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, how do you deal with your sadhana? How do you purify your own heart if your duty is to just, you know, all the time correct and...
It means if you're taking it from the aspect is that if the living entity means they are eternal servants of the Lord, the devotional process, I mean, attaining love for Krishna is the goal, and devotional service is the only process to attain that, right? So then in that, then you're going to be looking at that devotional service being performed means it's an attitude, because bhakti is a mood. It's not technically the mechanics that are used. Of course, the mood is right, you pick the best mechanics. Right? The best processes. But, and the, you know, in the situation and that. But its point is, it's about that attitude. So if it's seeing the attitude, then if you're looking at it It's not looking at what's best for management. That's where the problem comes up. That's where then, when you're mentioning how do they work it out. If they're looking at it from management as the central feature, then yes, it's going to be very hard to do any of these things. But if they're looking at it, the devotional service and the living entities under their care are to develop pure devotional service, then it's a matter of what attitude. Should we turn it to 26?
No, it's good.
It's good.
Like it's cold, and then we put chada.
Oh, okay, yeah. Yeah. It's like putting the AC on 16 and then sleeping in a big, thick quilt. Because you know? When you stick your nose out, you go back under. Yeah. More cozy. So, then, if you're looking at it, well, how is this, what has been done, or the attitude, or the action, or the words said, or, you know, whatever is the consideration, how is that, you know, useful in Krishna's service or not, according to the standards set by the acharyas? So, and that's the criterion. That's what I mentioned before. You know, is that didn't we just read something about that only seeing things useful in the Lord's service? Or was that this morning? Wasn't it? We just had a... We just had a basic part. Oh, yes. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, 1-2-200. One should perform only those activities, either worldly or prescribed by Vedic rules and regulations, which are favorable for the cultivation of Krishna consciousness. So that means, how is this individual going to advance in Krishna consciousness with the particular mentality or the different activities that they're doing? That's the main point. Then, what is the fault there? Then it's going to be, because unless they're performing devotional service nicely, how are they going to take part in the mission? You know what I'm saying? So it's a matter of, and in the mission, it's a matter of the cooperation together so that everybody is moving forward and they're able to engage others. So if you just focus on the management itself and that's all, then technically speaking, it means if you want to be really exact about it, you're not in a leadership role.
You mean looking at the management as the mechanics?
Yeah, you're not a leader.
Yes.
And that's, you know, the, what do you call it? You know, like the point before, no ifs, no ands, and no buts. You are not a leader. Because a leader is, it said before, unless you can save them from death, that's a leader. But if it's just a matter of what they're doing is bad for these mechanics being done, the management won't go nicely, then you're on the tactical level because you're seeing them and engaging them. But that means you have to work under someone who can see with that spiritual vision. And they have to be guided by someone who specifically sees in that spiritual vision. Because otherwise, dealing with all these mechanics and everybody, that sometimes they get distracted. So if a temple president is doing that, he technically should let someone else be the president and become, you know, head pujari or temple commander or sankirtan leader or, you know, something like that where he can just deal with the tactical. And if he's not so focused on everybody else doing, he has a temple president to keep him in line. You know what I'm saying? Because I'm just bringing this up because it's always brought that if you say management, immediately everybody's to stand back because, you know, it's just like, you know, management, there should be like you play a chord, you know, management, you know, everyone, oh, like that. Now, the whole point is to have a mission means it's going to be managed, but you have to know where management goes and where leadership goes, and management's always under leadership. So the problem comes is since the focus is on management and that's being thought. Before it was on leadership, how many temples were opened? How much got done? Because it was leadership And then you manage within that, you could do great things. But it's thought, oh, but you know, because it was the manager made it happen. No, it was the leadership. It was the people. You were following the people. And therefore, to do that, you could do big things. Hundreds of people could do, be involved in one activity. And so that's organized. But if it's a matter of, no, here's the manager plan, and this guy here, and this guy here, and this guy sits in this office, and that guy sits in that office, and this guy tweets this guy over here, and this guy like that, no one's going to follow anything. And hence, what's going on? So one should always understand management. That's the first thing of management, is you have to understand it has to be under leadership. And that's the, and then of that, that's the thing, is bureaucrats are deathly afraid of leaders. Deathly afraid. In fact, if they can do anything at all to keep leaders from coming up, they will. Because as soon as a leader comes up, their position gets put into its proper place and proportion and balance. And it's just an important thing to do, but they aren't the big guys. You know.
There was one temple where the devotee was more of a brahmin than a manager, and then suddenly this new devotee turned up, who was, it was not new in terms of age, he was super experienced in management, like genius.
Yeah, that's so very nice.
Let's bring him in, and let's get him involved. Within 6 months, he just burned everyone. The temple was upside down, and they had to get rid of him.
Because he has to work under leadership. So, thing is that that's done. It means the whole point of the mechanics going nicely is they get a particular result for Krishna, and that result for Krishna, Krishna will only accept if it's done in the right attitude. So if you focus just on the mechanics and not on developing devotional mood, you've missed the point. It means if you know management nicely, organize it nicely, because that's how you engage yourself. It means Yudhishthira Maharaj engages himself by running an empire. Right? Arjuna suggested, hey, well, just go to the forest and, you know, hang out there. Krishna rejected that. That's not you. You won't be able to do that. You will manage things. So therefore, organizing things there, but you have to understand that that's secondary. That's why you engage. The primary is a devotion. Just like you have a gross and subtle body, engaging that in Lord's service is secondary. That you, the soul, are engaged in the Lord's service, that's the primary. Right? And so, therefore, people who don't understand that work under people who do. Therefore, the new person who comes, he doesn't know devotional service, but somebody engages him, helps cleaning, helps making some garlands, helps in the kitchen, does things like that. And so they're engaged, and so the soul is going along with that. But as the soul becomes purified, then they can start to see that what's the position. And so then that's very, very important. So leadership means being able to, like Prabhupada said before, being able to see the spiritual. That's the actual thing like that. Then you can see there. But, of course, it should be done in such a way that managers can understand. Like that. And there's no reason, as we said, in those I mean, all the way before, especially in those early 80s, the people, the leadership there, they could get incredible stuff done. You don't see stuff like that happening these days. Because they knew how to organize also. But it was the leadership that drove, gave everyone the drive.
Now today we have committees. Everything is committees.
Yeah, you're not saying it right. You're supposed to say committee. No?
Yeah.
Then you get the right flavor. And then you have the gulags also, right? So it's actually, yeah. Yes. Who wants to follow a committee?
Nobody.
Yeah, so that's the whole thing. If the committee is made of individuals who you like the individuals, you're inspired by the individuals, they get together as a group, then it makes it even stronger. Okay, they've all decided. Then you know from every one of them, that's there, but it's because they're leaders. That's why you follow. That's why the only committee that Prabhupada created was the GBC, who's supposed to be leaders. That they, as individuals, are inspiring preachers. and teachers, and therefore then if they work together, then you know you have something solid. But if you turn them into managers, then who cares? I mean, literally. You know, the temple president has a meeting with whoever he has, and who cares? You know, nobody says, oh, what's going on? You know, it means the rules come out, you follow them. But you don't worry about it. Because it's that aspect is the management part. The leadership is how you can inspire people and do and get them engaged in their service. But if you're only doing it to mechanically make it work, you've missed the point. Then you should let someone else lead. You can be the manager, but let someone else be the leader. You know, so like in temples in India, you know, just the local temples, they run like that. They have a manager and they have the spiritual leader. And the manager sees that what the spiritual leader said, that's what gets done. But if he wants to run everything, then you end up with America. You know, any of the things like you have the Pope, right? And then Henry decides, no, I'll be the Pope. So he's the king and the Pope, and then, you know, doesn't go well for anybody. So you have to see is that if you do both, it has to be on the spiritual. The management is supportive. So that's the thing. So therefore, finding what's wrong in devotional practice or devotional understanding, that's the point. That being explained, then the person can correct themselves. It's just you've done this wrong, and then, you know, this is what's going down. Then who's going to be corrected? Who's going to be inspired? Because everybody can make a mistake. Therefore, you see, there's a time when everybody was very heavy on everybody. But at the same time, you could be heavy on them. You know? Like that. You know, was it? Said Babi Narayan Maharaj once said, I can dish it out, I can take it. Mm-hmm. You know, so his point is, you want to yell at me because I'm wrong? No problem. Because that's what I do to everybody else. He didn't have a problem with it. And I've seen all these other, they didn't have a problem. So, or like that one you have at Alexander, that story, where he caught the thief, and they brought him in. They said, Hawaii said, I'm punished because I'm a small thief, you're a big thief. You come in and take countries, I just, take somebody's purse. And so he let him go. He said, okay. Yeah, it makes sense. So that's the whole thing, is that that's leadership. You see the individual, you see the person and all that. Then that's glorious. Then you can get so much. And in that environment, management will thrive. But if management on its own, it will die. Because the point is management gets profit. And then you're getting profit, but then who's the profit for? Yeah. And so if nobody's telling you, and that's not being pointed out, then you know the direction it will go. Because you're either going up or you go down. There's no just sitting there in this, how you say. In other words, the thought of bliss being comfortably numb doesn't work. You know what I'm saying? You're either going up or down. I mean, there's that moment. You throw a ball up in the air, there's that moment, and then it goes down. So spending most of the time going up and most of the time going like that. Because, I mean, from a neutral state, we ended up here, so that didn't work out so good. So neutral's overrated. So, yeah, yes.
As in Krishna Samhita, Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes about the three Shaktis, mm-hmm. the Sandini, Samvita, and Ladini, mm-hmm. It's always said about the existent aspect has everything, the place, I mean the abode, mm-hmm. and the person's relationship is decided there, mm-hmm. means who is born and what relationship he would have. Mm-hmm. But then when Samvit Shakti is where the right mood is there and he is acting at that relationship, basically mm-hmm. use the word emotions. Mm-hmm. And then Ladini is where he is actually tasting the pure Krishna consciousness. Mm-hmm. Most of the time, the existence of something is considered success, mm-hmm. even with yeah. the management. Like getting facility, getting this, that. That's just the existence of it. And when the emotion is there, then it will give some knowledge and realization, the right emotion. And then that being done consistently for Krishna, then it will give that higher taste.
That'll be the natural spiritual.
And also in that context, then the people who become leaders are those who have the intensity of an emotion, so that they can have deal with a larger volume of facility. And that emotion,
so the field is bigger.
Yeah. So that emotion can be either pure rati, which is with devotees, or four levels of avasa. The rati avasa is what we saw with people like great scholars like Ramdas Biswas. Then the three lower levels, which is sattvabhasa. Sattvabhasa are more like religious people. They can deal with people, they can talk nicely, so they can deal with so many people. Naturally, they can work in a bigger field. And then the lower one is nisattva, which are professionals, the corporate people, because they figure out how to
deal inspire, with, like, dramatically. Say 500 do, you know, like this, and then people give money.
Like professional actors also.
Yeah.
So because they figured out how to do it, then they are always good at it. And then the last one, the most common now, is the pratipa, those who are just agitators. So they only know how to get down the government.
Pratipa, isn't it? It's pronounced Antifa. Go ahead.
So these are the ones like more common right now. When something is going wrong, they can come in front and destroy everything.
Yeah, they can only destroy.
So, but they have that emotion.
Because that strong emotion. That's the interesting thing, is that because the emotion is coming at the second step. That if there's emotion there, you take it that it's more advanced. But it's not based on progression, because it's only about destruction. It's not that people it's not that people benefit from it. Just that they're angry that someone else is benefiting from it, you know. So no one should benefit. You know, it's like we were shifting the Gurukul like that to the new place. Because that place is where it was, is the temple, when it was going to be over on this side. It would have come halfway into the Gurukul, so then we needed to shift. So, you know, it was some time, so we had to get in a new place and then started shifting. Then there were all kinds of trees and everything that were there. And one of the laborers, then he made the point that says, what about the trees? You know, why are you leaving the trees? You know, and then says, well, if you take the trees, they're a bit big, I'd be worried they might die. He said, let them die on our place. Okay, this guy's serious.
I remember before they started the piming of the Tiruvipi, and they decided to cut all the trees, and there was a petition in the community, how dare you do this? Let Mayapu Vasi leave the trees the way they are.
Yeah.
All the trees have to go.
Yeah, we took the trees over to that side.
We did?
Yeah.
They died?
They died. They were too old. I mean, by that time, they were like 30 years old or something. So, you know, because you have to cut them off short to be able to move them and that. Yeah. In China, they can do that. They take a tree, full-grown tree, cut it off, they wrap it up with the hay, twisted hay, and then put it in the ground and water it, because the outside doesn't go dry. And then eventually it grows roots in that. They just put in whole trees.
In China, you're on the highway in Sanamiya. And there's this huge tree at the back of a truck. That's all they do. Overnight, they kind of park.
Yeah, no, it's pretty far out. They're really good at it. So we weren't so good at it.
They have specialized machinery ones for the big people.
Yeah, no, it's pretty far. Pick up the tree, yeah, and then they put it on the back of the truck. Yeah, no, it's pretty far out. I heard the Japanese have a system where they want to move a tree. They start, I think, 3 years before. And they pick where the tree is. The tree is this big, so then in like this, a little bit in from the, you know, the branches, because how big the leaves are, that's how big far the roots are.
Right.
So they'll go in from that and cut a trench all the way down, leave it open, so it'll cut the roots. So then the tree will grow more roots inside. Then the next year they'll go in a little farther. And then the third year a little farther. And then yeah, and so then, you know, it'll be whatever's the ball that they can move. All the roots of the tree will be in there. Because the tree's still doing okay. Because they only do enough that the tree will stay fine. Then they pick it up. But, yeah. That was the old system.
Now they have some machinery to bring all the roots at one place.
Yeah.
I just saw it recently. This was so high.
That's far enough.
Who told them when they were cutting the trees off now that Prabhu would go and say, I planted them, I cut them?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He said open, like.
Yeah, yeah.
It wasn't mental at all.
Yeah, and so then once they cut them, then we took, dug them up and took them.
But they left the palm trees in the back.
Oh, that's there.
They're still there.
Yeah. But I mean, as long as they were on the road, they shouldn't be in the temple. But anything where the temple would be. So we took all those, but they didn't make it.
He said, why are you, you know, screaming? I planted the trees. I take them out. What's your problem? He was like...
Yeah. Yeah, I remember when I think the end of one movie, they were, I think they were... I don't know if they were Hunas or they were Cossacks.
Yeah.
Something like that. They were the it means in that area where they live is it kind of like plateaus and ravines, and they all ride on horses. Mm. Yeah, so there was a whole thing like that, and the father in that, he was the leader of them, and his son, and somehow or another his son got into the city and became a Christian. Yeah, and then at the very end he calls the son out and they're standing face to face. And he said that. And the shot.
No way.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the end of it.
Yeah.
It's famous one. I always tell
it's a famous.
Huh? I always tell it for my son. It's famous.
Is it a Russian movie or?
Yeah, it's from Kazakh history. It actually happened.
It's in Kazakh history. Mm-hmm. Okay. So Kazakh.
Yeah. I gave you birth, I'll kill you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You see, I gave you birth. Your life,
Yeah.
The guy wasn't loyal.
Yeah.
He had two sons and one. Yeah.
So, like that. Quoting from the famous then.
Kazakh Acharya. Kazakhs, they also wear shika. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And mustache.
Yeah, yeah.
Like this.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, a little higher, but still it was.
Well, I mean, the shika's on the top, technically.
It's like the
uniform,
like.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, the Kazakhs, so the Mongols, they also had the big sikhs. Because that was the thing, was that they had the
huge
sikhs. Yeah, the big
sikhs. Yeah, like
down that. And then when the management went the other way, then they would cut them all.
Yeah.
And so.
They braided them.
Yeah, no, but they would be like down to their feet or something.
No rastas.
No rastas.
Probably no coconut oil or something.
The kid and Sika in the front.
Yeah, yeah, that's pretty far out. Huh? You do also have in India, depending upon which Veda and which Shakas and that, you had front. You also had, I think, you know, side, front, side. So there was a thing where you could have up to five.
Egyptians, right? You know the movie with Moses?
Yeah, yeah. You had one on the side.
The Sika on the side.
Oh,
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's... The Sikh here. Right,
but the bun is
the top knot.
Yeah, they just put it in the front.
Like here.
Yeah.
That's not the
married
guy is voice the front one.
Unmarried.
No, they just put the cloth. Unmarried means they just put the handkerchief and tie it. So you see all the hair when they're wearing the full what do you call it? Turban. Mm-hmm. Then that means they're married.
Yeah, the seekers move around by tradition.
Yeah, yeah. No, it means that you see in all the old cultures, everybody had it.
So. Jerusalem is on the side.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, if you have a real long seeker and you have glasses, you just split it, pull it, and put it under the glasses here. Works.
It's curly, especially.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you tie it, then when you open it, it'll be curly, and then when you put it. You can't put it when you just after a bath. But. Okay, so therefore, the criticizing, it's not you're criticizing the Vaishnava, you're pointing out what he's doing is won't be useful for him to advance in devotional service. And you know how it'll, you know, may be harmful to others, how it won't be, you won't be able to properly engage in the mission. You know, so the mission won't, so nothing's going to work out. So you have to adjust those things to there. So that's the aspect, is that the person, if they can adjust, then what does it matter about what's been done or what's passed? It's a matter of, can they adjust it to what's proper and move on? You know, and then preach to others about how it's about the devotional service. But if it's all about retribution, then you're moving into that fourth state of rasa, where it's just, it's a display of emotion, but it's coming from the mode of ignorance, it's for destruction. So that has no things. The other one before that, the part of that was passion. And above that, you know, it's so-called, you know, trying to be religious or this or that, but, you know, it's all imitation. But so one has to, that's the point, and then that's how they can maintain their sadhana, because their preaching is also, it means their organization is also preaching, is also teaching. So, and that also, those people will have many of the next, you know, many layers of leaders. Because one thing, you have one leader and everybody else is following another. He has leaders. He's created another group. There's another group below them. So there's three or four levels of leaders. Because you're training them what to do. Then they know what to do. They can train the next people. But if you just tell them that's wrong, they may or may not know why. And for the next people, they'll never explain. It's just you're wrong. So the point of succession is lost when you don't train. You know, and so you're training. Leadership means you train others. That's the difference. Management means it's not about training, it's just about accomplishing something. So like you said, it's the arta aspect of the, you know, of the process. Yes.
Yesterday I was hearing memories of Bhagavan Prabhu about Srila Prabhupada. He said that everybody like morning walks with Srila Prabhupada. But he said, in America it was quite different than in India. And he explained why, because I always saw the pictures of the movies and I thought, you know, it's always blissful. But he said no. He said in America, because, you know, American disciples, they knew how to deal and how to accomplish things. So everybody was around Srila Prabhupada, and Prabhupada, you know, it was light, and Prabhupada often glorified his disciples. So it was everybody was like really crowded around, and everybody wanted to get first next to Prabhupada. But he said in India it was completely different story. Because especially in Mumbai, when that project was procrastinated like for a long time, and so many mistakes, like gross mistakes were. So he said everybody was very distant from Srila Prabhupada, although everybody wanted to get his association, and then he would say something, and then nobody like everybody froze, almost stopped walking, and Prabhupada turned back and said, so what is your why the books don't match, why the cement is not coming, why materials are late, or you know, why they overprice you and like this. So he said in India, although it was also very popular, but in a different sense, because Prabhupada basically managed India himself, because they couldn't figure it out.
Yeah,
it was too crazy.
In a completely different scene. Like you saw, Raghunath Das, you know, with his father, uncle, and then that other tax collector. Yeah, then how he dealt with it, you know, that personal this and that and all these kinds of things. Because the Americans are just, their managers, you know, you recognize that and then they're inspired. But here it was that you had to do real personal and all that. And then everything gets done.
Also, there are so many other people who are helping. We don't hear much, but in conversations, we see that how much work they are doing, but they're all like, only Prabhupada could deal with them because others were too young, and
yeah, yeah. He's all the these contractors. And that. Okay. So does that make sense? So
yes,
it's just a matter of, it's a shift in what's the perspective. You're looking at the primary and how what they're doing isn't supporting of that, and it's not engaging the secondary properly in the primary, then it's training and teaching. So those who are learned are the ones that move up, and those who have more prominent positions or, you know, are well played. Those who can't, then you have to find a position in which they can do it. And if they're too much, then they have to, you know, live outside the temple, come to the temple when they're comfortable to do what's useful.
In other words, if you lose managers, you can't survive. If you lose leaders, then you're in bad shape.
Yeah. Yeah. How do you say? I think it was 84? 1984? Okay. Raghunath Bhatta, okay. Although a preacher may sometimes criticize others, Raghunath Bhatta avoided this, even if another Vaishnava was actually at fault. Raghunath Bhatta would not criticize him. He saw only that everyone is engaged in Krishna service. This is the position of the Mahabhagavat. Actually, even if one is serving Maya in a higher sense, he is also a servant of Krishna. Because Maya is the servant of Krishna, anyone serving Maya serves Krishna indirectly. Therefore, it is said, some accept him, whereas others do not. Yet everyone is his servant. One who does not accept him, however, will be ruined by his sinful activities. C.C. Adi Leela 6, 85, 133, purport. Even if another Vaishnava was actually at fault, Raghunath Das would not criticize him. He saw only that everyone was engaged in Krishna service. 133, purport. Yeah, so that's the perspective. And then from there, as you saw, preachers might, because they're taking the position of the Madhyama, so they have to make that discrimination. But he was saying he just acted as a Mahabhagavat, so then he didn't. But in doing that, you have to see it in affection for the Lord, friendship for the devotees, the innocent, and then what's against devotional service. You have to see like that. But if you bring in the sense of justice and modern morality and these things, then it'll be ruined. It will drop. And then people won't be inspired. Because whenever you work with these things are not fixed, they will come around, and they do bite. When you're pointing the other way, they'll come and bite you. Right? Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.